POTUS. Kilo 9 Echo Quebec, Chris. Alpha Delta Zero, Mike India, Pete, and K04K Chuck. The Bakken Amateur Radio Society takes its name from Earl Bakken, who was the founder of Medtronic. Earl was always interested in radio and is a founding sponsor of the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting. Earl allows us to use his name because he's a strong supporter of learning, experimentation, and helping others. You can learn more about Bars and Earl at hamoperator.com/W0MDT. I repeat, hamoperator.com/W0MDT. The 444.075 and the 444.525 operate from the Medtronic facility near Highway 10 and I-35W in Mountain View, Minnesota. Please remember there's a chat window available at hamoperator.com. Select MinWiz and then MinWiz chat. Alright, Net Control will only be taking check-ins from stations with traffic for the net. Please reply with your name, city, and state. We'll acknowledge your call and put it on the list in the order received. Alright, with starting the check-ins, let's see if anybody has any announcements for the net. If you do, give us your name, city, and state. Go ahead now.
Kilo Golf 5, Alpha Whiskey Lima, KG5AWL. This is Felix in Axtell, Texas.
This is Rick up in central Minnesota, up here at Little Falls, northwest of St. Cloud, N0BJN. That's November 0, Bravo, Juliet, November.
All right, acknowledging both Kilo Golf 5, Alpha Whiskey Lima, Felix, and November 0, Bravo, Juliet, November. Rick, got you both in there. And Felix, why don't you go ahead? Kilo Golf 5, Alpha Whiskey Lima. Go ahead with your announcement.
This is KG5AWL. Hello, Chuck and everybody else on the net. Hope everybody's having a great evening. I do have an announcement. Don, AI5AI, has had a medical emergency. He is currently in an intensive care unit at Ascension Providence Hospital in Waco, Texas. He has been in the ICU for about a week. He is recovering, but is going real slow. Don, of course, has been a participant of the MinWizNet for many years, and please keep Don, AI5AI, in your thoughts and prayers. And that's about all I have, so thanks. KG5AWL, back to Net Control.
All right, Felix, thank you very much for the information we wanted to hear but really didn't want to. And just as a heads up for everyone out there, Don is a frequent contributor, along with Felix, about the DR2 using the IMRS board. And very knowledgeable guys. I hope he gets well soon. With that, November 0, Bravo, Juliet, November. Rick, why don't you go ahead with your announcements?
Hi to Chuck and the rest of the staff here on the MinWiz Technical Net. First off, thank you so much to you and the folks behind the scenes there, Chris K9EQ and Otis and all the rest that do the magic here every Monday night, sharing information with us here on the MinWiz Technical Net. It's greatly appreciated by the ham radio community. As most folks know, the HamFest season is gearing up here across Minnesota. The first one I have tonight is the Cabin Fever Reliever. St. Cloud HamFest is coming up on Saturday, February 18th. It's being held at the St. Cloud National Guard Armory. The address is 1710 Veterans Drive or A Street North in St. Cloud, Minnesota. It runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Admission is $10. There'll be a VE testing at 10 a.m. There'll be hourly door prizes and a grand prize drawing. For more info on the Cabin Fever Reliever, St. Cloud, Minnesota HamFest on Saturday, February 18th, This is their website at W0SV.club. Phonetically, that would be Whiskey Zero Sierra Victor dot Charlie Lima Uniform Bravo. And that is for the Cabin Fever Reliever St. Cloud Ham Fest coming up on Saturday, February 18th. The Midwinter Madness Buffalo Ham Fest is coming up on Saturday, March 18th. It's being held at the Buffalo Civic Center. The address is 1306 County Road 134 in Buffalo, Minnesota. Buffalo is northwest of Minneapolis and St. Paul on Highway 55. It runs from 8 a.m. to noon. There'll be a VE testing at 7:30 a.m. They'll have door prizes and a grand prize drawing at 11 a.m. For more info on the Midwinter Madness Buffalo Ham Fest on Saturday, March 18th, check out their website at k0ltc.org. Phonetically, that would be Kilo Zero Lima Tango Charlie.org. And that is for the Midwinter Madness Buffalo Ham Fest coming up on Saturday, March 18th. If I can, Chuck, I'll let the system reset. I'll be right back with one more Ham Fest for the group. The Brainerd Ham Fest is coming up on Saturday, April 15th. It's being held at the National Guard Armory on Wright Street on the south side of Brainerd, Minnesota. The address is 1115 Wright Street. This one's pretty easy to get to. Just take Business Highway 371 into Brainerd, and you're only going to go about six blocks, and Wright Street will come up on your right-hand side. Go east on Wright Street, and the National Guard Armory will come up on the left side of the street. For more information on the Brainerd Ham Fest on April 15th, stop by their website at brainerdham.org. That's brainerdham.org. And that's for the Brainerd Ham Fest coming up on Saturday, April 15th in Brainerd, Minnesota. That's it from here, Chuck. Thank you so much for letting me come on and sharing my Ham Fest information with the group. We'll send it back to you from N0BJN, Rick in Central Minnesota.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate all that you do for us and keeping the announcements up to date. I'll try again, see if anybody else. Do you have anybody with an announcement for the net? This is your chance to check in. Name, city, state. Go ahead now.
W-A-9-E, Roberto, in Glendale Heights, Illinois. Whiskey America 9-5.
Whiskey Alpha 9 Echo, Roberto, why don't you give us what you've got, then you might have to repeat it a couple times. You were really broken up into the machine today.
Well, hi, Chuck. I can try a different repeater if this doesn't work, so let me know information. I didn't hear it yet. The 3Y0J Bouvet will be ending in probably maybe 6 to 8 hours. There's more information on their website, but due to things going poorly, they've decided to quit early. I don't know if anybody else had mentioned that. Did that come through? Over.
All right, Roberto, that one came through just fine here. I don't know what the issue might have been. Bouvet Island, if you're HF-er, ending in 6 hours, so now's your chance to get in if you need to. So, Roberto, thank you for that. And I'm going to move into the check-in portion of the net. We'll see if anybody out there has comments or questions for the net. We try to cover all things Yaesu Fusion. If you've got some Yaesu Fusion questions, now's your chance to answer them. go ahead now. Name, city, state.
This is Jim, KN6AYW, La Quinta, California.
This is Glenn, WA3VHL, Allentown, Pennsylvania.
All right, got two of them that time. I've got Kilo November 6, Alpha Yankee Whiskey Jim out of California, and Whiskey Alpha 3, Victor Hotel Lima, Glen, Allentown, Pennsylvania. We'll start with Jim, Kilo November 6, Alpha Yankee Whiskey. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening to everybody on the net tonight. I just wanted to give a shout out to Otis, who kind of helped me get through this computer breakdown and getting my WireX back up running again. With the email he sent me, I went ahead and got the sound card that he was talking about, and actually my buddy is N6PSP. He downloaded the driver that that Otis recommended, and the thing seems to be working fine now. So just wanted to give a shout out to Otis and tell him how much I appreciated his help. This is Jim, KN6AYW, La Quinta, California.
All right, so I'm going to pass it over to Otis. Whiskey 4, India Oscar Delta. Otis, why don't you go ahead?
Well, good evening, Chuck. This is W4OD, Otis. And Jim, you are most welcome. I'm glad we were able to help you out, and that's why we're here every Monday evening. To help each other out, and I believe K9EQ Chris actually assisted in that as well. So it's always good that we can help one another. So that is the purpose of the net, to help one another, and hopefully you can share that in the future with someone having an issue. Just share the knowledge. That's all we ask. And thank you for getting back with us and letting us know that that did work. Thank you very much, Jim, and you're most welcome. W4IOD, back to net control. Thank you, Chuck.
You're very welcome, Otis. As I liked your answer. Share the answer with someone else. That's what we're here for. So, Jim, thank you, and I'm glad your system is up. Next up, Whiskey Alpha 3, Victor Hotel Lima. Glenn, Allentown, Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much, and good evening to all on the net this evening. My name is Glenn. I'm located here in Allentown, PA, and I just want to start off by saying I'm extremely happy that I found this group. I've been really searching for some answers on some issues I've been having here, and doing a few little Google searches on the internet and what have you, I stumbled across this group earlier this afternoon and made it a note to definitely check in here this evening. So again, I want to thank all of you for sponsoring this net for technical issues for repeater owners and that kind of thing, WireX related, of course. My situation is I have a Yaesu DR2X Fusion repeater. It's running on VHF. It works beautifully, by the way. I have a WireX HRI-200 connected to it, and no problem at all with that situation. Everything works beautifully. The issue that I'm having is I've created a YSF reflector, and that reflector is primarily for the use of coming into this repeater, my repeater, and being able to get into it through a hotspot from any location. And my issue is that, so I have that running on a Raspberry. The YSF reflector works fine. I can, if I'm working YSF to YSF, the audio passes just beautifully. So that Pi, running on a Raspberry Pi 3, and that is working with no issue at all. I have a Raspberry Pi 4 that I'm using as a bridge to the repeater, and that's on a Pi Start MMDVM. Let me just drop here for 1 second. Okay, and the issue there is when I initially I bought a ZoomSpot Elite 3.5, and that came with a UHF top hat. I didn't know that at the time that I purchased it. My repeater is a VHF repeater, so I needed to figure out a dual band situation for a top hat. And as a result of that, I ended up just running another. I've got it running on a Pi Star 4. Raspberry Pi 4, I'm sorry, running Pi Star, latest version, and the audio comes through on the receive beautifully, and it works sometimes on transmit, maybe 75% of the time. I've looked at bit error rate code, everything I could possibly think of to try to look at the offsets, and for whatever reason, I can't figure out why this thing works maybe 50 to 75% of the time. When it works great. But other times, the transmit audio, if I'm running an FT5 through my repeater, I can hear it on the YSF beautifully, but it doesn't pass through Wires X. And I'm wondering if anybody out here has experienced a similar issue. So thanks for letting me put that out to the group, and I'm all ears for anybody that might have any open suggestions for me. This is Glenn, WA3VHL, back to Net Control.
All right, Ben, I think we can help you. K9EQ, Chris, over to you. I think you got this one. K04K.
Okay. So a couple questions, Glenn, before we dig in much farther. So how did you resolve the issue that the repeater's on VHF with the, the YSF node that you're using, to do that bridging?
Okay, very good. Great question. So I did a lot of research, and bottom line is I tried to get a board that was made by ZoomSpot. They no longer make that board that's dual band because of parts. So I went out on eBay and found a board that has a, there were several boards, frankly, and I tried two of them so far with pretty much similar results. One of the boards has a little LCD screen on it. The other one had no screen on it. But, it's an SST something 32 board. And I bought, like I said, both of those boards and with similar results. And I hope that answers your question. It's a, has both UHF and VHF. I'm running, because my repeater is VHF, I'm running reverse on that board with my VHF frequencies over to you.
Okay, because there's a couple little things. I wanted to get that clarification, so just for everybody's reference, the hotspot boards, like the ZoomSpot, are able to do VHF. What is needed to do VHF is there's another component that has to be stuffed on the board that costs like 20 cents, and I don't know why some of them leave it off. Of course, the quality of these things is a little variable. I've really not had any problems with them. I bought them off of Amazon. So you get a little board for $25 and marry it with a Raspberry Pi for like $2,000, and off you go. Okay. So one of the first problems you're going to have is how do you do the repeater split? And so I assume you figured that out by on the expert page, setting off a receiver offset, basically, to make that happen. When you say transmit, it's not clear to me which signal is not being received very well? Is it when the repeater transmits or when the bridging hotspot transmits?
Okay, great questions. And by the way, I've done a lot of research on this, Chris. I really appreciate that. Somebody did mention about that 20-cent part, and I kind of looked at that for the moment, but we'll come back to that. So the answer to your question is I'm using an FT5, let's say, to transmit through the repeater. Through my YSF open spot, let's say. And what will happen is I can hear you, let's say, coming back through my YSF reflector, but when I transmit with my FT5 through the YSF reflector, it's not necessarily passing through Wires X. Sometimes I can even hear it on the local repeater because I'm looking at the Wires X dashboard. I'll hear I can hear it coming through the local side of the repeater just through regular audio, but it's not passing through Wires X on the dashboard. And let me even further clarify that. Sometimes it lights up green on the Wires X dashboard when I'm transmitting, but still the audio doesn't pass through that way, although I can still hear it coming through the local repeater. Hope that makes sense, Chris. Back over to you.
Okay, so basically the repeater's not hearing the hotspot when the station comes through the hotspot. You undoubtedly have a bit you need to change. I'm kind of looking for that now. They tend to hide things. The interface is not the greatest. Basically, the GUI just instantiates all the possible variables, and it's kind of up to you to figure out if you care about any of them. I'm not seeing it right now. I did kind of write this up at one point. All right, I'm basically looking at the node that is right now doing the bridging for our Minwiz right here. It'll come to me. I tell you, Glenn, why don't we get on with the net? I'll fiddle around with this. I'm not seeing the variable right now that I'm looking for. But there's a couple things you've got to do to get everything to work right. And it's not completely obvious necessarily, but if you could I just found it. Let's see if I drag it out long enough. So if you go to the expert part of the setup there, and I think it's for the MMDVM host. So you'll want to go to the MMDVM host and our host again. There is a couple of sections where they deal with Fusion, and you got to be in the right one. And drat it, I just lost it. Oh well. I mean, I should stick. Oh, there it is. There it is again. Okay. So when you scan down that thing, that MMDVM host, you'll have a section that says DMR, and under that is one that says System Fusion, and there's one under that that says P25. You want the System Fusion that's between DMR and P25. There are two System Fusion sections. There is a item called Remote Gateway. Remote gateway. Maybe it's easier just to search for remote gateway on that page. That should be a 1. So verify that that is a 1. If it's a 0, it might start working when you change that to a 1. This is a problem with the hotspot talking to the repeater Otis is saying it might be the, well, I'm assuming you've got the TX-RX. Well, okay, it's a good point. Otis has another point. And under modem in the expert area, there is a field called TX offset, and that should be set to whatever the offset is that you're using on your two-meter repeater, like 600 kilohertz. So you would have the frequency on the configuration page would be the output of the repeater, and you may have to the output of the repeater, and then under modem, you've got the TX offset, which is how much you want to displace the transmitter into the repeater. Otherwise, it's simplex, and that's not going to work. And then right above that is RX offset, which you use to fine-tune the bit error rate of the repeater going back into the bridge. Does that make sense, Glenn?
Yeah, now we're talking. I have the number one in the remote gateway because I read an article about that where somebody else went through that. The audio that passes through on a regular radio is different than that on a repeater he mentioned, and so that solved that issue. But what you're talking about now definitely is going to be helpful to me because I'm in the modem section, and I don't have anything under RX offset or TX offset. My repeater is 147.225 on the output, 147.825 plus 600 on the input. So you're saying I need, I think, 600 in one of those fields. Is that right, Chris?
Right, because what's happening right now is your hotspot is operating simplex on the repeater output. It's like if you were trying to work the repeater and your HD was on simplex, not going to work out well for you. So you need to go ahead and do that. And let's see. There's a private-public setting. I'm looking for that right now. Otis was saying you have to have the hotspot set up as public. And I don't remember where that is. Well, why don't you take care of that offset and play around with that, and then we'll come back to you later, see how it's going. Okay, Chuck, take it away, K9EQ.
All right, Chris, thanks for sending it back to me. Glenn, sounds like you've got a little bit of homework. When you get it done, give us a call back. And Otis, Whiskey 4 India Oscar Delta, has a comment to add to this. So, Otis, over to you.
All right, Chuck, and just to help to Glenn out on that, as far as what Chris was telling him in the advanced the part of that, as far as the TX receive offset, that's not your typical repeater offset. What you're establishing on that PiStar software is your bit error rate. In other words, you're calibrating your hotspot to the radio or repeater that's using it in regards to transmit and receive. And the one thing that I have noticed on some of the Zoom Spot type devices, if you will, is they're very susceptible to temperature fluctuations, and they are very susceptible to different radios. So it's a trial and error process in regards to setting that up with the proper transmit and receive offset. And a lot of folks don't do that. And then when it gets into a bridging part of that, it doesn't carry the ones and zeros over to the WireZX system. I've discovered that as well. Typically, that's why I tend to stick with the open spots. Of course, they are UHF devices, as Glenn has discovered. For the VHF, it's still the same process. You're trying to achieve the lowest bit error rate, and you can see that on your dashboard. So for me, when I'm setting up something like a PiStar dashboard, I use two browser windows, one for the expert screen and the other one where I can see the dashboard. And then once you achieve the lowest bit error rate, that's how you do it. You tweak it up and down, back and forth. But that's part of the PiStar formula. Where the open spot is more confined, I just raise it to C4FM raise call sign, and then
AGC on that and let it take care of it. But that's the great thing about doing Wires X as well. Yaesu pretty much takes care of that bit error rate. And remember, the radio board on that hotspot, I'm sure it's of the highest Chinese quality, but it didn't cost too much, so there's not a whole lot of filtering. So it's one of those things where setting that transmit-receive offset is very important in regards to dropouts and bit error rate. The lower, the better. That is a tweaking process, though, so I wish I could give you more information on that, Glenn, but it's different on every repeater and every radio because nothing's the same in regards to the differences in frequency. Chuck, that's all I have. W4IOD, back to net control.
All right, Otis, thank you very much for that, and more work for Glenn. I'm going to throw it out there to the whole group again, see if anybody else has a comment or a question for the net. If you do, check for now. Name, city, and state. Go ahead.
KE0YJJ, Rick, Pine Island, Minnesota.
KE0YJJ, Rick, Pine Island. Go ahead with your comment or question, sir.
KE0YJJ here. Roger, Chuck. Thank you. And I just have one question. And this Pi Star or whatever he's trying to build, is it a single hat or dual hat? That's my only question. KE0YJJ.
Okay, I'll pick it back up, WA3VHL. It's really a single hat, but it's dual band as opposed to full duplex. So it's single, but, or I should say it's dual band, but not duplex. So there's only one antenna on it, if that answers your question. And real quick, guys, what Otis said, and I really appreciate that, input. I spent hours on this, doing that, minus 50, minus 40, plus 50. I've done that bit error rate code thing, and that has not, it just didn't help. I don't see much of a difference. And I've got my bit error rate code down to 0.2, 0.3 on regular transmissions, so I think my bit error rate code is okay. Back over to net control.
All right, Glenn, well, good luck with that problem. This is Chuck K04K, and I'm going to pass it off to Chris, K9EQ. He's got some information for people who are having problems with the FT70 on high power. Go ahead.
Okay, well, you remember several weeks ago, I mentioned I had discovered a problem. A little background. I have a fusion repeater here at my house. I live on top of this hill, overlooking the city of Escondido, San Marcos, and a few others. And so it turns out to be a nice place to have a repeater, because I get pretty decent coverage from it. And I was out and about a while back, and normally I don't use the FT70. And I wasn't in a great location, so I thought I'd put the FT70 on high power, and I wanted to change the room that the repeater was connected to, and I couldn't get the Wires X function to work. And I'm thinking, repeater problems, that kind of stuff. And fiddling around with it, I discovered when I put the FT70 on low power, it worked okay. Didn't work on high power, did work on low power. Very puzzling. And the radio in the car was working fine no matter what I did to it. Drove, ended up going back to the house, pulled into the garage where I can kind of look across where my wife parks into another area, and there's a repeater sitting there, so I'm not very far from the repeater. I grabbed the FT70 again. Works fine on low power, does not work on high power. And I'm within 10 meters of the antenna. I'm not very far away. Well, this was interesting. The answer to it, because it involves pictures, is over on hamoperator.com. And on the main page right now, there's a link to the blog post, which is entitled FT70D High Power Problems. And if you go to that post, what I've included in there are sort of a brief verbal description, but two pictures that are from a basically an SDR, and it's giving the spectrum of the FT70 transmitting on FM with no CTCSS or DCS, so a dead carrier. And one of them is taken on low power, and the other is taken on high power. And maybe you can see the difference there. You just go to hamoperator.com, go click on that blog post, FT70D High Power Problems, and there are two pictures there. And this is a picture of the whole monitor. So you see the frequency that's on, you see the signal strength. Over a tiny window on the left-hand side is the demodulated signal. The window at the bottom is kind of like a waterfall display, like some of the HF rigs have, or you might see when you're running FT8 or something like that. But the main spectrum, the frequency spectrum, is the larger image on that shot of the screen, and that's simply frequency versus amplitude. The bit of that that's highlighted in green is 12.5 kilohertz. So that if that whole green thing were occupied, that would be about the bandwidth of a fully modulated FM signal or a C4 FM signal. And what you see on the first image on low power is you see a relatively high spike. Well, and I should say too, I'm going to do that right now. That didn't work. Okay, well, it used to work. You could click on them and make them bigger. Anyway, what you see on that first one is that the main spike is probably 40 dB stronger than any of the other noise and stuff that you see. The signal from the radio looks kind of like this sort of a tower kind of a thing that gets narrower as you get towards the top. And you see little torques and blurbs and stuff like that, some spurious signals that it might be from the SDR and might be from the radio. When I go and do that again on high power, what you see now is a different story. You see that tall spike in the middle, which is, you know, the carrier, and now only about 15 dB below that spike you see those spurs, but now they're a lot stronger. In fact, you see several spurs sitting there. I checked some of my other radios, like the FT1 and so forth and so on. They don't do that. They do have some spurs in there. Sad to say that Baofeng looked cleaner in some cases, but that is a distinct difference. Another thing that you'll notice in both of those charts, in the waterfall display at the bottom, if you look very carefully towards the bottom of the waterfall display, you'll see it kind of looks a little bit like a backwards L. The frequency starts off closer to the center, and then it drifts off to the right a little bit, and then it stabilizes. That's kind of a characteristic I've seen of pretty much all the Yaesu radios, where for the first 70 milliseconds or so, once you key the transmitter, there's this little blurp, this little shift in frequency. And I guess when I was originally sitting in the car thinking about it, I was going, well, that... Maybe when it's on high power and the battery doesn't have as much voltage and stuff, this little blurp is too big, and that's why the wires X isn't blocking into it or anything. Well, it turned out it didn't make any difference. That little blurp that it does at the beginning of the transmission is kind of the same. But the FT70 is definitely not very clean when it runs high power, and it just consistently does that. I found that the antenna can make it worse or better. So when I put on a VHF, I'm sorry, UHF only antenna, which ideally is a much better antenna, and what I found in HD antennas, a monoband antenna always works better. I've got some VHF or UHF only antennas, and they are the best performers I have on UHF. I put that antenna on, and it's even worse. It's just no chance of getting control of the repeater. I can talk to the repeater okay. It picks up my voice okay, but I suspect the bit error rate is much higher with the voice, and so ultimately, even though I'm rating high power, I might not be getting as much range. So anyway, here's what I'd like people on the net to try doing over the next week or so when you have time. You know, some homework. And that is, play around with whatever radio you have, the HD or whatever, and see if there are cases where you can get into the Wires X control mode. You know, you're pressing and holding the DX button or whatever to get to that mode where you can change rooms. And see if there are situations where that works on low power but not on high power. If you do find that, that may be an indication you have a spurious output on your transmitter. I'm just curious if more people see this problem, particularly if you have an FT70. I'm guessing my FT70 might be just an oddball that, you know, I mean, like I say, none of my other radios that I play around with seem to have this problem, and I just discovered it by accident. So if anybody else observes that, please check it out. The reason it's more sensitive to, like, that Wires X control function than, say, just yakking on the radio, and on high power, it was fine, I could yak on it fine, is that when you're sending data with Fusion, it does not tolerate any bit errors. So if you have one bit that's wrong, the command will fail. And you may notice that when you're weak, you have a much harder time with, you know, changing rooms and such than you do talking on it. That's why. Because the voice is not very sensitive to bit errors, but when you're sending data, and that includes pictures and, you know, messages, all that kind of data, any bit errors cause the transmission to fail. Once again, hamoperator.com. Go and look under the link there, and under the blog. It will be, when I get it working right, listed under troubleshooting. And there you go. I'd be interested if what people find out. Back to you, Chuck, K92.
All right, Chris. I gave homework to a whole group of us now. Hopefully we'll get some of that done and get some reports back next week. Going to check again, see if anybody else has comments or questions for the net. Now's your chance. Name, city, state. This is Chuck, K04K. Go ahead now.
Hey, guys. Hi, JP out of Adelaide, South Australia, with a question for Chris.
All right, acknowledging VK5, Julie Papa, Pete, Adelaide, Australia, with a question for Chris. Go ahead with your question, and then, Chris, go ahead and pick it up.
Hey, good evening, Chuck, and all the listeners on the net. Chris, with the impending release of the new 500, there doesn't seem to be much chatter about whether we're going to see a Wires X software upgrade. The question is in two parts, and that have they actually, with the last release, covered future radios coming out onto the market with the five-digit codes, or are we likely to see more upgrades with the Wires X software over the coming years with new radio releases? Over to you, Chris, K92, VK5JP.
Okay. Well, we don't know what Ace is going to do. When they did Fusion 2, at the time we didn't know we were using Fusion 1, but when they did Fusion 2, that was when they moved to taking kind of like a color code in EMR terms, or CTCSS and FM terms, and turned it into the DGID, or DPID, yeah, DGID, group ID. And when they did that, they went through all the radios at the time, even one that was discontinued, the FT1, and released a new firmware to incorporate that feature. It's a lot of work to do firmware updates and release them to the field, because when you have a lot of radios out there, if people are going to mess it up, you're going to get service calls. It's a very unpleasant thing all in all. So even when there are known bugs and things like that, unless it's a killer, they're not going to, they don't want to do an update. And particularly if they add a new feature to the system, they have to go through and update all the radios, and in some case manuals, which is really, updating the manual is really expensive. Because when you think about all the translations that have to be done. Whether new features and will come along to Fusion, who knows? It's certainly capable of doing much more. There's no question about that. You could do a lot more with the system, and it just depends upon whether they decide to do it. So it's more of a kind of a political marketing question than the technology question, because once you've got the digital signals whooping around through the airwaves, there's a lot of stuff you can do. I mean, with the cell phones and what they can do from the back in the early days with your analog flip phones. So I guess the answer to your question, Pete, is who the heck knows? Back to you, Chuck, K9EQ.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. Pete, asking questions we have been asking for years and all wanted to know the answer for, but haven't been able to find them. With that, I'm going to bring the net to an end. We've all got homework for next week. We'll have to see how that works out. I want to thank you all for listening to the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Radio Net. Please allow 1 minute for rooms that wish to disconnect before resuming use of the room. This is Chuck, K0 Horror K, and everyone have a great week. 7-3, y'all.
Okay, and before y'all take off, just one last thing. I did reformat the post so that those images are now larger than they were before. So if you're looking at it and the images are too small for you, just go and refresh the screen and they'll be bigger. Next week, I've got a couple things planned. What we'll talk about is I found a new website to get the lowdown on what manufacturers are doing with their radios and new equipment. It's kind of an interesting site. It's not just an FCC site. So you end up finding information on this site about regulatory documents that are not just pertaining to the FCC, but globally. And in fact, you can see a number of radios that were meant only for Japanese distribution. So we'll mention that site next week. And there you go. And a few other things will be going on. A couple more issues in the wings and some other developments. So hopefully tune in next week at the same time. I will add that this net is available live streaming, and also it is recorded and presented as a podcast. You can find out more about that at hamoperator.com. You just go to MinWiz, and under MinWiz, you just go to and I just lost it, MinWizNet. And if you click on MinWizNet, you'll see a link to the live stream, hopefully, and then a dynamic list of recorded shows that gets updated automatically when they're released. 730 K90Q.
Just want to thank everybody here for having this net and helping us all out. Thank you so very much. WA3VHL 73.
And that was the MinWiz Balkan Amateur Radio Society Fusion Technical Net for Monday, February 13th, 2023. The net is held Monday at 7:30 p.m. Central Time in Wires X Room 21493 and YSF Reflector 21493. Look forward to hearing you there. If you can't transmit or into the net, there is a chat box or chat room located at hamoperator.com. Just go to MinWiz chat and then you can communicate with other listeners and the net control stations. 7-3 until next week.